All right, can you hear me all right? All right. Again, I apologize. This week is blood drive. By the way, go give blood. They deserve a plug. You can't hear very well? Okay, yeah, it's really, really bad, but we don't have any other choice. And I apologize also that I think we have to endure the same tribulation next week, but I forget why. There's some other group that out-trumped us. In any case, we're here, and that's what matters. And if anyone should overhear, more power to them, or more power to us. Psalm 30 is the appointed psalm for Easter 3. Oh, by the way, one piece of old business from last week. M. Fuseo, one of your favorite words, as in emphysema. John 20:22, we were talking about that last week when Jesus breathed on them. And I actually did my homework. It says breathed in. He breathed? Well, we did that last week. I didn't worry about that. I was just looking at the verb, all right? And it turns out that that's a hapax in the New Testament to that verse. Now, what's really striking is that that is used fairly rarely in the Septuagint, but one very striking example is Ezekiel 37:9, better than that, even one better than that, Genesis 2, verse 7, when God breathes into the form of Adam the breath of life. That the New Testament is using what otherwise is a fairly rare word of the New Testament. Now, what I didn't check out, and methodologically needs to be checked out, is how common this is in other Greek literature. I don't know, Jeff, off the top of your head, if you know anything more about this. But the fact that it sort of stands out in the New Testament there, it makes you wonder if there isn't a clear connection. That this is what Jesus is doing. This is new creation going on here, founded in the statement of the forgiveness of sins, is very significant. Well, anyway, that's old business from last week, and I just wanted to follow that up. Now, Psalm 30, verses 1 through 5, I guess. Why they do only 5 verses, especially when the psalm only has 13. We'll have to leave to the wisdom of the lectionary, but we can at least do what they've assigned. Ms. Morshear, now I guess maybe they do include verse 6. Come to think of it, I didn't bother to look it up in English. If they mean Psalm 31 to 5, that probably means in English, because it struck me that they shouldn't stop short of verse 6, so I was going to do verse 6 anyway. So in Hebrew, it's 1 to 6. You know the difference here. The difference is that the Hebrew verse numbers include the superscription. All right, fair enough, which you can kind of look at, but isn't technically part of the psalm. Well, let's look at it. Mizmor is one of the standard words for really song. It's not the word for psalm, though what the difference is could be debated. But this is our friend Zamar. We've looked at this several times over the past few weeks. That's the same word you get in Exodus 15, which is translated my strength or my song. But here it's clearly the word for song and is somewhat of a synonym of shir, which is the next word for song. So a song of Hanukkah, Habayith, Ledawith. Now, Hanukkah, you know from the Jewish festival called Hanukkah, which is the dedication or the rededication of the temple. This is probably in reference to the first dedication of the temple. A song of dedication of the house, assuming that the house here is the temple, though that's making an assumption, Lidawid to David. Now the psalm begins in verse 2. Aro mimka Yahweh ki dalithani. Oh boy. Aromimka. Can you parse that? Well, it's got an aleph prefix. That should tell you it's imperfect, first person, I will. This is the root, room, room, to be high. This is the so-called polale conjugation, one of those odds and ends that in first-year Hebrew we haven't quite gotten to. It's an odd end to come at the end. Room means to be high. This is a substitute conjugation for the D system. That's what these things are. For hollow roots that don't have a middle root letter, you can't double a middle root letter, so they double the last root letter, and you get what looks like resh, mem, maim. That's essentially what's going on here. So it has the same sort of intensity that the D system has, not to be high, but to heighten, or make high, or exalt. I will exalt you. Note you've got the object suffix glued onto the end. O Yahweh. Yahweh is vocative here. Ki dalithani. Dalithani. It's three pieces. The root is dala, third hey. Third hey changes to yod before consonantal suffix. Ta is the perfect ending. Ani is your object suffix. This is the same tani you have. We just heard this on Good Friday. Eli, Eli, or Eli, Eli, Lama, Sabachthani, with the accent moved. Our choir sang a song in which this was quoted as Lama, Sabachthani, and the rhythm of the music forced it to be pronounced Sabachthani, indicating, of course, that they didn't learn their Hebrew very well. And I guess that probably doesn't rub anyone else in the congregation wrong, but it always, that's the curse of, you'd be much better, ignorance is bliss, remember, folks. You'd be much happier in life if you just didn't know these things. Anyway, this is Dalathani. Dala means to draw water. If it's any comfort, I had to look this up too. I had no idea what dala means. It's to comfort me, it only occurs twice in the kal and once in the pl, and this is the once in the pl. The assumption of the lexicon is that it means to draw water in the kal, but maybe means to draw something out of water in the pl. Well, probably. Here's where you know the lexicon is struggling as well. It must mean something to rescue, just from context. I mean, it's got to be the reason for which I'm praising God here, right? Because you have dalad me. Well, fill in the blank. Saved me, rescued me, drawn me out of water. There's no reference that I was drowning here. So I don't think you necessarily need water in the context. Or in the translation, but in any case, it's got to mean something like rescue me, and the implication is from my enemies, because that's the second half of this line. Velo simachta o yavai li. Velo simachta. Samach we know is the verb for be glad. In the pl, it means to gladden, transitive, to make someone else happy. And not you have gladdened, O Yavai. This is the direct object. In poetry, you rarely have the D-O marker, so you can't expect the eth there. You have not made glad my enemies, Li, with reference to me, apparently, with the assumption that they were wanting to do something to me. Okay? Any questions? Verse 2, 3. Yahweh Elohai, Yahweh my God, Shawathi, I have shawad aleka. Shawad, now this isn't a rare verb. It means to cry out for help. By the way, we're going to do Jonah in Hebrew 1. There's a great pun in the psalm at the beginning of Jonah 2, where at the beginning he shawaz, and at the end he declares that Yahweh is my Yeshua. And it's a pun between shawa, cry for help, and yasha, to save. So that they form a natural a pair that way, and they also sound alike. I have cried for help, eleka, to you, and tirpaini, parse it. Tau prefix, imperfect, second singular masculine. Any is the object suffix. Note the connecting E vowel with the imperfect. And the root is rafa. Don't know if we've had this verb a lot. Rafa means to heal. H-E-A-L, not a dog running behind you. To heal someone who is sick. Raphael is the angel of healing in Kabbalistic literature. And you healed me. Get it? The assumption being he was sick, though that's not stated. Heal probably has a very broad sense of just rescue, too. I mean, the culprits here in the previous line are enemies. And these are presumably human enemies who are out to get him. Or is that very broad-based, too? You know, an enemy is anything that causes me ill, and healing is anything that relieves that. So illness can be anything that makes me ill or causes me ill. Four. Yahweh helitha. Oh, we can parse this verb. Helitha from Allah. Hifil, perfect. Note the composite schwa. Third hey changes to yod. You have caused to go up. Hifil. O Yahweh, you have caused to go up min Sheol, from Sheol, nafshi. Here's the direct object. My nefesh. My life. O Yahweh, you have caused my life to come up, go up from Sheol. Interesting. I mean, you could do some exegetical comment here that Sheol. This is really poetic hyperbole. It's not that the guy was literally dead and in Sheol, but he was as good as dead. Right? Though, you know, I don't want to completely detach that from resurrection motifs either. This is Easter 3. You have brought me up from Sheol. Chayithani, another thani ending. Piel. Piel, another third hey root. Boy, these are great third hey forms. Chaya, to be alive. In the piel, it means to revive. All right, sort of transitive. You have revived me. Tani, me. Yaurdi bor. Now this is here's a good. You guys are taking hermeneutics. Here's a Kathiv Kare problem. You'll see that the pointing of Yaurdi is strange indeed. This certainly seems to be from the root Yarath, to go down. The Kathiv, the way it is pointed, is actually an attempt to make a regular infinitive construct out of this. In which case, that should be sort of a comet's katuf there. This is the cuddle form with pronominal suffix. My yarading, my going down. In which case, it would read, you have revived me from my going down of pit. Bor is a pit. Obviously here a parallel to Sheol, or grave. Now, oddly enough, the Kathiv. The Kare is what I've been working with. That is the way the vowels have been pointed. All right, what is read out, and therefore the vowels. The Kathiv, the consonantal text, actually makes more sense here. And this one has puzzled me, why in the world they change the Kathiv. Usually the idea is the Kathiv doesn't make sense, so they change it to the Kare, they read something different. If you read this for the consonants that are there, ignore the vowel points. And use the wow as the mater letter holum, you get yo-rede. Now repoint the last vowel to sere-yod. Yo-rede would be the kal active participle. Yo raid, yo redeem, yo redey in construct form, which means the ones going down of a pit, or the ones going down to the pit. That's makes perfectly good sense. You have revived me from amongst the ones going down to the pit, or the ones who are dying. This is a metaphor for death. Why the Masoretes repointed this, frankly, I don't know. But it's an interesting problem and probably worthy of a little digging around if you want. Or here again, check English translations. My guess is most ETs will follow the Kathiv here and not the Karay, which, again, is unusual. Five. Zamri, here's our verb, zamar, in the PL imperative. Sing, l'Yahweh, O his chassid guys. A chassid is usually translated a holy one or saint, but you'll notice that this is really related to the noun chesed. A chassid is a guy who's been chesed-ed, who has been graced, if you will. It sort of puts the burden of saintness on God's action rather than ours, and that's not bad. Sing to Yahweh, O his chesed's, chesed ones, and hodu, we've seen this before from Yada, the imperative, and praise, or and give praise, l'zeker, to the remembrance of his holiness. Now that's rather clumsy in English. To the remembrance of his holiness, to his holy remembrance. Well, that's okay. What I like about this is you don't translate it in order to remember his holiness or something. The remembrance is the noun that's sort of the given by God. And that isn't a bad theology of remembrance, that remembrance is not our action in calling things to mind, but God's giving us something by which he is called to mind. My guess is you'll have some different translations on that one, how to wrestle that into English. Then finally, verse 6. Now, this is one of the toughest lines to translate. This comes up in that Bitzer book, and I remember students just hacking around on this line, because out of context, this is really rough. Ki rega. Rega really means a moment, a little piece of time. For a moment, be'apo, in his nose here the metaphor for wrath or anger, a moment in his anger, kayim, life, in his ratzon. Now, ratzon means his favor, that which is deemed acceptable by sacrifice. This is all related to the acceptable year of our Lord. Rega's an odd word here. Does that just mean that his wrath is only for a moment, but his favor is for life? That would be a legitimate interpretation of this. And frankly, not bad. Some have proposed that rega here is really to be paralleled to kayim as an antonym and possibly means death. For death is in his anger, but his grace is life. Well, that's even better, especially for Easter 3. But I'll commit that to your own study on rega, what you're going to do with this. Then the second half doesn't get a whole lot better. Ba'erev, in the erev, in the evening, yalin, he will sleep. Yalin means to spend the night. And the subject must be baki, which is the noun for weeping, crying, tears. That seems to be the subject. In the evening, crying will spend the night. V'laboker, and, or better, but, to the morning, rina, shouts of joy. And you get the contrast here. You could paraphrase this. You go to bed crying, you wake up joyful, which is a parallel to sort of his anger lasts for a short time, but with the dawn comes joy. And of course, this is connected to the matters of life and death and Yahweh's salvation. This isn't just, you know, silver lining theology where the morning will bring a new day and we all suck it up and try harder again. But this is related to the action of God who deals with life and death issues. And if you can't do something connected to the Easter season there, you probably shouldn't be preaching. Okay, well, we got to hustle here.